I suppose the thing about film music is that it is intended to elicit our emotions very specifically. It's meant to push buttons as we watch the film. And it's emotions that we're going to be talking about now. We're going to be discussing this with Professor Jane Davidson and Dr. Sandra Garrido. They are from the Centre for the History of Emotions, and we'll find out what that is as well. But before we talk, let's listen, and we'll listen to some music by Bach, and you might like to consider what emotions it evokes in you. Well, that's music by Bach, of course, from the St. Matthew Passion, the chorale O Haupt vor Blut und Wunden, which is usually translated in English as O Sacred Sacred Head, Sore Wounded. And it's an example which is used, the St. Matthew Passion, in the research by my last two guests on today's programme. They are Jane Davidson, who's in our Canberra studio, and Sandra Garrido, who's in our Sydney studio. Welcome, both of you, to The Music Show. And Jane, maybe I can start with you, and perhaps you could tell us, what is the Centre for the History of Emotions?
Yes, the Centre for the History of Emotions is an Australian Research Council Centre of Excellence, and it's been going for 2.5 years now, and it's actually a nationwide organisation spread across the universities of Sydney, Melbourne, Adelaide, Queensland and University of Western Australia. And what we're interested in is this long history of emotion and its impact on individuals and societies, how we feel and think, and how that shapes who we were then in the past and how we are now, nowadays. And we look at concepts like emotional communities, the role of emotion in political change, in social and economic change, in meaning, what it means, what specific emotions mean. Because, of course, the term itself is something of a more recent construction and concept. So in the early modern period, they were thinking about passions. And in particular in the arts, what those emotions have meant, what the meaning of the music or the literature, you know, Shakespeare or whatever, has been, what it is today, and how we reinvent, reshape those things, and how important emotion is in our lives. And it's a sort of reframing of the concept of what history is. If we think of the Great Fire of London, what emotional devastation did that have on people? And how does that parallel nowadays in today's Australian society when we have this great fear, understandably so, of bushfire and so on?
So how far back do you go then?
Well, our period is 1100 to 1800, that sort of long period, specifically because we have key researchers with specialisms in that area. But we also draw out what that long European history has, if you like, and how that impacts today on Australia as a multicultural society. And so some of the research we've been doing that we'll talk to you about now, in fact, draws on that very broad spectrum of individual and cultural ideas that are composed in Australian society today.
But you are a professor of music.
That's right. Yeah.
So where does music fit in this?
Well, I think very, very importantly, you know, music has had a long association, a long, you know, since written records are there, music has had a profound impact on us. And it's something that has been reported for good and evil across time. And what we've been interested in is indeed how it shapes and reflects and indeed adds to our emotional existence.
Well, give us an example, perhaps. But let's talk about that Bach, for instance.
Yeah, well, for instance, there, of course, there are some things that you might associate with profound, very basic things happening to us at a very profound physiological level, are things happening in our brainstem that are eliciting a kind of physiological arousal in that music. Well, yes, in a way, but it's quite slow tempo. So is there something about the rhythmical entrainment of that music that affects or has impact on, say, our pulse, our heartbeat? And of course, if it's very stimulating music, that will indeed have that kind of physiological impact. In examples such as that, it's rather slow paced. And then we add to that the sort of cultural association with the harmonic content and the structure, the use of repetition, the use of the pause, the use of the harmony hanging, waiting for more. We have an expectation of what's coming next. And of course, that has varied how we read and interpret that over time. And of course, it's slightly different in different cultural contexts. But nonetheless, we would argue that some of the foundational principles of how we're having these reactions is based, if you like, in our hardwired capacities as a human.
Yes, I mean, when you talk about expectation, of course, I mean, that raises the whole business of what we already know and what we have already heard. And in the case of the Bach, I mean, for a lot of people listening to that will know that it's from the St. Matthew Passion. So there's a whole layer of information there. Even if they don't know it's from the St. Matthew Passion, they might recognise it as a Bach chorale. And again, that's a category on its own. And perhaps they have sung it as a hymn themselves, or maybe they just know the Paul Simon song, which ripped off the tune. So, I mean, in any of those bits of information are going to affect the way in which we hear it, aren't they?
Absolutely. And of course, that's what, if you like, we're researching how these things impact on the individual, how these impact on the group, and then at the cultural level, and so on and so forth. And how these, of course, vary over time, and how at one point in our history, we might favour in a mass way one particular song, or it might have a whole cultural resonance and significance that at a different time will mean something quite different.
Yes, I'm going to bring Sandra in here, because we should talk about My Life as a Playlist, which is a book which the two of you have authored, although it hasn't been published yet, but I have a copy. And maybe, Sandra, you could tell us about the concept, or there are two concepts, aren't there, in this book?
Yes, I guess the two broad areas that we're looking at in this book is the way people use music in everyday life, and we describe it as self-medicating in the book, just the way people use music every day to set the mood, you know, perhaps to even change their moods, to create an atmosphere, to even influence the moods of the people around them. So that's one area that we're looking at. And the other area is the way we use music to mark these really key events in our lives, you know, the really peak important ceremonies of our lives, for example, getting married or when our children are born, or a funeral, things like that. So these seem to be two very different and yet in some ways similar ways that humans are using music, and it really permeates our life to such an extent. It's very interesting.
Yes, I mean, and there's the conscious choices, like, for instance, you know, you decide what music you're going to have at your wedding. But there are also, and I think in some ways these are more interesting, the subconscious choices, the choices that are made for us, the fact that we associate particular songs with particular summer holidays or particular girlfriends or whatever it is. I mean, these are things that we may not even like the music, but right. but it insinuates itself in our lives,
yes.
doesn't it?
It gets tangled up in memories of places that we've been and people that we've been with. And yeah, and then you only have to hear a couple of bars of that at some point in the future and all of those memories come flooding back
You're
to us.
You're 16 again or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. It's one of the most powerful ways of evoking nostalgia is you know, just a little snippet of music, so it's very powerful.
Yes. Why?
Why? Yeah, well, as Jane was describing, there are all of these things that are hardwired in us. We don't really know the answer to exactly why, in fact.
But this is your job to find out and tell us.
I'd like to think that I could find, that we could find the answers in my lifetime. But let's face it, philosophers have been discussing these questions for centuries. I think we're getting a little bit closer, but we've still got a long way to go. So, yeah, but I mean, as research in neurology advances, we're starting to find out more and more. But yeah, there really is a lot that we don't know about how it works.
Jane, do you think it might be, because I do, a good thing if we don't find out the answer?
Well, that's like anything you say, if you demystify something. Look, yes, I agree to a point, because I think what happens, you know, Sandra and I are both trained as music psychologists. And of course, once you go down that route again, there are cultural traditions and practice in those areas. So you begin with a very small question, you know, why do we entrain to rhythm? Why can we keep time? And you start and you go down this very fine track, and then you lose the sense of the whole and where the music's embedded and so on and so forth. And of course, some of research of the neurological kind, for instance, looks at the ways in which the brainstem is stimulated. Well, that's great. But then when you start and talk about higher level experiences that people talk about, especially associated with things like spirituality, and things that are embedded in highly complex cultural meanings and associations, well, to try and nut that out in an experimental circumstance is very difficult. And so, look, I hear what you're saying. There is a sort of mystery and aura around our relationship with many phenomena, and music is one of those. And indeed, people believed that, didn't they? They believed that it's sort of, you had this humoral spirit inside you and it was stirring you up, and music could have a really profound effect on that. And I don't want to lose any of those sort of beliefs and rich anthropological stories, if you like, that do contribute to making sense of our existence and how we interact, as I say, with these phenomena, or indeed music as a technology for our everyday lives. And yes, the danger is to go down such a route that you lose track of that. But nonetheless, it's important to try and unpick, to begin to understand who we are and how we tick and why we use music. Come on, why do we use this technology? And, you know, for me, one of the deepest answers to that, in amongst all kinds of projections about evolutionary theory and so on and so forth, was a very profound example I saw of a 7-month gestation baby, so 2-month prem baby, sitting. The mother was so ill, she was in intensive care, and the father takes this baby, this tiny little mouse, into his hand and places her inside his shirt and begins rocking her. And that little tiny baby elicited that sort of goo goo gaga call that infants make, you know, ah. And of course, the father answered, and they went into this musical dialogue, timed musical dialogue, taking turns, singing this melody, communicating, sharing comfort, emotional space. And of course, the baby went to sleep. Now, to me, that's a very profound example of, at its essence, what that musical communication is about and why it's so profoundly meaningful to us.
I agree, absolutely. Professor Jane Davidson is my guest, and so is Dr. Sandra Garrido, and they are from the Centre for the History of Emotion, but we're talking particularly about the importance of music and the effect that music can have on us. And one of the effects which we were told about some years ago was the so-called Mozart effect, which I think has now been effectively debunked. This was if you played Mozart to your children, or indeed to lab rats, they became better, more spatially aware. But we do know, don't we, that music makes children better at all sorts of things, that it seems that children who have music lessons do well at most other subjects. Can we account for that, Sandra?
Well, again, I suppose that's another thing that we don't have a full understanding of, but it comes down to what we now know as the transfer effect as opposed to the Mozart effect. And we have to make a distinction here between music listening and actually active music making. So the original concept of the Mozart effect was this idea that if you just play music to an unborn child even, that they become somehow smarter, which we know is not true. However, with the transfer effect, music seems to sort of exercise all sorts of different skills, which can then transfer over into other domains. So, for example, there are a lot of commonalities between the way language and music are processed in the brain. And so by exercising those skills by means of making music, a lot of children seem to become better in terms of language. It also affects the way children are able to perceive emotions in the speech of other people, the expression of other people. And so the theory is that children can become more emotionally intelligent, better able to understand emotions in other humans as they can in music. So it seems to be sort of exercising these skills in other which then, you know, those skills transfer into other domains.
Yes, I guess it also makes children better at concentrating and better at listening, which are no small achievements.
And problem solving, concentrating, all of that sort of thing. It can be very good for their self-esteem and their motivation, all of that sort of thing.
Jane, is this part of the research that you're doing?
As a broader perspective, not specifically for history of emotions, but I have been engaged over a long period of time looking at how children acquire musical skills and what their entrances and exits to that music learning are, and what impact being a music participant has as a sort of lifelong skill. And of course, I'm a great believer in music's for everybody. And of course, with the wonderful advances in technology, and we discuss this in our book, it's amazing that we can have so much access virtually in every circumstance of our lives. At the click of a button, we can be listening to different forms of music, and that's incredible. However, our cultural relationship to music as a performer has become very, very separate. And for me, that's a tragedy. I mean, a real tragedy. Sandra's just explained how music can help with all those things you've just explained, to do with concentration, to do with motor skill, to do with social intelligence, actually, how you collaborate with somebody on something as fine-grained as coming together in music. And to miss out on those opportunities, to me, is really terrible. And in some research we carried out over a 14-year period in the New South Wales area, in the Sydney metro area, we traced children across their learning from primary school all the way through to university. And of nearly 200 children we investigated as they entered primary school and had the free opportunity to join a school band program, only two out of all of those children went on to read music at university, which in a way seems a sad reflection. However, on the other hand, of those, almost a quarter of them kept going actively engaged in musical performance, and the other three quarters of them kept going well into adulthood as avid listeners and consumers of music. But of course, from my own perspective, I would love more people to be involved in the performance of music, because it gives you an even more intense and direct relationship with this emotional aspect of it.
And it makes you a better listener too, doesn't it?
Absolutely, yes. Yeah.
It's been very good to start talking, at least, about this huge area. When I said earlier that I hope that it wasn't solved, of course, it doesn't mean that we shouldn't try. I think we can learn an enormous amount from this research, even if in the end there isn't an answer. But thank you very much indeed, Sandra Garrido and Jane Davidson, for being my guests on today's music show. My Life as a Playlist is not just a book. By the way, do we know when it is going to be published?
Yes, in October. And people can go now to the website. It's UWA Press. And there is a tagline there on the homepage. And they can place their orders there.
Fantastic. And we'll put a link to that on our website. But speaking of websites, there's also an ABC website called My Life as a Playlist, which will be up and running on Monday. And you can go to it. And if you do, there'll be various levels of things there. There'll be a tile on the RN website, so you can get there easily. And also on the Music Show's website, we'll have a link too. But you can sort of go light and look at song lists that have been provided, you know, as we were discussing earlier, for weddings and funerals and so on. And various people have made suggestions, musicians, Radio National presenters, me, what sort of songs should be played at weddings and births and funerals. And also popular love songs and all of that sort of thing. But you can also go heavy and you can take part in some of the in-depth surveys about music and personality, and you will find yourself contributing to the research of the two women to whom I've just been speaking if you do that. Or, of course, you can just listen to tracks. That's another option. Anyway, it'll be there from Monday. My Life as a Playlist, the website, as opposed to the book, which is published next month. This week's music show is produced by Maureen Cooney and Penny Lomax and Indra McGlynn. Technical production from Jenny Parsonage and Paul Penton. On Wednesday on Life Matters, there'll be more on the subject of My Life as a Playlist, and there'll be more across Radio National over the next few weeks. And we'll go out today with, well, one of my choices. See if you can work out where this fits in.
For this body you are holding, Lord, I hate to see her go. Can the circle be unbroken by and by, Lord, by and by? There's a bitter home awaiting in the sky, Lord, in the sky. I follow close behind her, try to hold up and be brave, but I could not hide my sorrow when they laid her in the grave. Can the circle be unbroken by and by, Lord, by and by? There's a bitter home awaiting in the sky, Lord, in the sky. Brothers, sisters crying, what a home so sad and lone. Can the circle be unbroken by and by, Lord, by and by? There's a bitter home awaiting in the sky, Lord, in the sky.